The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Artie Gras podcast, where we discuss all things art and culture in Palm Beach County and a little bit beyond. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and I'm here with a very special guest today, my friend and fellow artist, Cruz Bogle. What's up?
Hello. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited.
I'm excited to have you here.
Yes.
We've already spent a fun day together so far. We actually did a little bit of studio time, and my hands still have the paint on them to prove it.
I have a little drip on my shirt I saw, but
that
not
might have been
much.
Thanks to me. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, I'm just grateful to have you in here, and thank you for taking the time to come down here and make it happen.
Of course.
So we have a history that goes back, I think, starting kind of on Instagram and social media. We sort of knew about each other through the art scene, and we started doing some collaborations that led to me coming to your home studio to paint with you. And then just eventually that rolled into sharing a studio in Delray Beach in the Arts Warehouse for a couple of months, which was awesome. And of course, now you've taken off and you're TikTok famous and you're just blowing out of the water. But it's been great to get to know you as a person and an artist. And I'm really happy for our friendship. So again, I'm just happy to have you on here.
Yes. Thank you for your kind words.
But we got to get into your history a little bit more for the wonderful viewers who are going to want to know all about you and your story. Super memorable name for sure. Cruz. Yeah. Very unique. And that came from you being conceived on a sailboat.
Yes, literally.
Literally, your parents were on a multi-year cruise.
Yeah, a two-year trip with my two older sisters who were aged 2 and 9 at the time. And they were living in Maine. And they left Maine 1988 on their 36-foot sailboat, the four of them. And they sailed down all the way down to Venezuela. And I think my mom said they were in maybe the Puerto Rico area when she realized that she was pregnant. It wasn't just seasickness. So then from Puerto Rico-ish down to Venezuela, they were island hopping, looking at hospitals, and they landed on Bonaire, a little island right off the coast of Venezuela. And for some reason they liked, I think timing-wise and hospital-wise, they just liked that location. And so I was born on the island of Bonaire. And they were at this hospital for, I think, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. And then right back onto the 36-foot sailboat.
Right back on the sailboat.
And started sailing back up to Maine. And it was a total of a two-year trip. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Wild. And then the rest of your kind of upbringing was sort of back and forth between Maine and Florida?
Yeah. So we were back in Maine, grew up in Maine until I was 10. But my dad hated the winters. Mm. So he would sail down to Florida because he grew up in Florida. So for the winters, he would sail down and we would go with him from time to time or fly down to Florida and meet him. And then we'd all sail down to the Bahamas and spend months and months in the Bahamas. So that was kind of my upbringing, was living on an island in Maine and then sailing down to Florida, sailing down to the Bahamas, on and off of sailboats, on and off of islands in the Caribbean. So pretty incredible upbringing.
Was it always kind of the Delray, South Florida area, or were there another spot at the time?
No, so it was Delray. We moved to Delray in 99. So that was our home base then. But my dad grew up in Boynton and Delray, so it's always been his home base as well. Nice. So that's why.
That makes sense why your parents have the coolest house, because it's just the most eclectic, fun treasures everywhere. Yeah. There's art all over the place. It's just such a cool space that they've.
It's kind of a house you may find in the Keys, you know?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Very beachy house.
Got a lot of character to it.
For sure, tons of character.
There's just interesting stuff everywhere you look, including both of our artwork, of course.
Yeah. It is
and,
beautiful.
And your house is kind of the same now, actually. What you and your girlfriend Leslie have going up in New Smyrna now.
Yep.
You're creating like this very peaceful, creative, like artist hideaway. It feels like when I see clips of the house up there.
Yeah. It's like growing up, you know, like my parents' house felt like, you know, my house, but being the child and not the parent, you know, like I couldn't do what I wanted to do with the house. And now that Leslie and I are both creative people and we have our own space with our own animals. And so it's cool to curate it in the way that we like. So like Leslie's literally painting on the walls, like mural type stuff. And we've done a little collab where I painted a sun in Procreate and she used a projector to put it up on the wall and she painted my artwork. So it was a little collaboration. A little
collab. I love that. Yeah.
And we have, you know, just tons of animals and we have a whole wall that's full of plants. So it just, a bunch of our artwork is hanging up there, the collab series you and I did. So it's a very kind of everywhere you look, there's something different and like unusual or creative that a lot of people don't have in their house, but it's just very, it's a very cool, comfortable, creative, peaceful space. Kind of like you said, it's cool to be able to bring it to life the way that we actually want it and treat it like it's our space and do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah. Free will.
Yeah.
Gotta use it.
Exactly. Like we forget that we have free will and we can literally, I want to splash some paint on this wall. Yep. Okay. Like let's do it.
Not everything needs to be painted beige or white. Like that's all right.
Yeah.
So now that's also where you have your studio set up currently, right? So if you're painting, you're painting from that space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it's not really studio-esque, but just set up in our like plant wall room. Yeah. Have my paints, my easel and everything there. So that's,
I mean, you have a great kit because you can just like, you know, all just the whole easel folds up and fits in the van with you and, you know, brought it down to the studio today in the garden. So, all right. Well, we definitely would talk more about some of your process in the studio, but getting back to kind of your background, your story more, obviously your journey took a major turn at 19. You were in a skimboarding accident down here at the beach. Yep. You had, I believe it's C4 vertebrae. So the spinal injury was on your C4 disc.
Yes.
And you were paralyzed at the time from, was it the shoulders down at
neck
that
down.
Point?
So neck I couldn't even move my shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like you and your friends and, you know, people having to realize that you weren't just like face down in the water for nothing. Mm-hmm. And then you went on a journey of like your whole life is completely changing. Ultimately, that led you into an art practice as kind of part of some recovery, something good for you to do, you know, nice mental space for you to get into. At what point did you realize that art practice was becoming more of something that you wanted to lean into and, you know, do professionally as opposed to just have like a side hobby of it?
It took me a while. So I had my injury 17 years ago and then I started painting. I think my first painting was 6 months after my injury. So for the first probably 5 years, I think I did like a painting or two a year. And it was just, it wasn't anything special to me. I didn't super enjoy it. It was just like, I can't do a lot, you know? So, let me do a painting.
Yeah.
And it didn't really stick until probably, so I'm 17 years in, probably 8 years in or so, maybe. It was more of like, okay, let me create more. Let me post more. My mom was taking my designs and printing them on t-shirts for fundraisers. So I like saw the little bit of buzz that like, oh, people like my artwork, you know, whether it's on a t-shirt or actually on a canvas. And so I think once I started selling my originals, which was probably 8-ish years in, I saw like the appeal to it more as well of like, oh, like people are actually interested in this too.
And it gives you an energy too, right? Because probably for a while, maybe you weren't showing people that you were making art, one, because you weren't making much of it, but also because you weren't necessarily thinking that anybody's going to care about this.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, when you get that kind of like, oh, that's really interesting. It does kind of spark something where like, ooh, this is kind of cool.
And I think that's what the best art does, right? It has some sort of story or it tells some sort of story. So I have a crazy story behind mine, you know, like, and then you see whether it's a time lapse, like I post or whatever, a picture or something online that, oh, he actually does that with his mouth. Like it's so much more appealing. And then people are like, oh my God, that's incredible. I couldn't do that with my hands. Like, I get that all the time.
Yeah.
Can't even draw a stick figure.
So explain, like, give us a little overview of what, you know, what your artwork looks like, how you're going to describe it to somebody who maybe has never seen it before and they're listening to this.
As you just heard, my upbringing was on and off of, sailboats and down in the Caribbean. So my inspiration comes from being on the water, all these bright colors, animals, fish, coral reefs, stuff like that. So that's the majority of my art is like nautical themed. I use acrylic. I literally just paint with a mouth stick in my mouth that has a paintbrush attached to the end of it, as you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I just pull up to my little easel. Luckily my knees and my arms pull right up under it and into it. So I can get to the canvas and I literally just can lean down, dip the paintbrush in the paint and, just paint like anybody else. It's just using my mouth instead of a hand.
Yeah.
It definitely is when you see it, it hits a little different, you know, compared to, oh, he just paints with his mouth. If you just hear that, it's you can't comprehend it as much. Really.
And seeing the video of it too, you're have a really great presence on social media, on your Instagram, on your TikTok, especially now, where, like you said, there's a lot of video time lapse of you actually painting, or you'll do live streams where you're painting as well, and people get to see that process and realize like, oh, that's a lot of, you know, I mean, painting in general is effort, but this is a lot of effort, a lot of time that goes into it. And it's a freaking skill to develop because I have tried mouth painting. We have a collaboration series where at the final one, I did a mouth painting with you and it was a challenge for sure.
You did a phenomenal job though.
I mean, I love that piece. I am very lucky that it's kind of traded off between our houses at different times. So it's with me now and I love it. It's hanging in my bedroom. It's definitely a unique way to create something and to move paint across canvas. I mean, the things that you don't necessarily think about when you're painting with your hands are, how does this brush need to move across this space? Mm-hmm. And if it's not like gliding nicely, you know, how much pressure you can get with your mouth and your neck versus your hand. It's just a whole different ball game.
Yeah. Kind of like how we were talking about with the pencil. Like I can't sketch because to get the angle of the pencil to do what you want it to, I just can't do that. So I have to figure out how to do it without.
Yeah. Cause tracing. The way that you're doing it, and I'm kind of holding this in the camera so you can see you're holding it in your mouth. So it's more direct. So even the choice of brush matters because if something's like, I think you probably use round brushes more than anything.
Yeah.
Because you can manipulate that in more ways than you could like a flat square brush or something with a point like a pencil.
Right.
So even that kind of directional consideration that you have to make when you're picking out what materials you're going to use, you got to take all those little things into account and also probably learn the hard way a little bit, right? Like what kind of canvases you like, what kind of paint works for you.
Yeah, that took a long time as well. Like I was just going to say my first, probably quite a few paintings, I would do the whole painting with one single brush. Mm. Like I wouldn't change it at all to do the smaller stuff. Like I would start with the small brush and just do the whole thing. And now I've honed different skills. And when I first started using little tiny detail brushes, like it was so hard. I felt like I was shaking and like I couldn't actually do the line that I wanted or, the fine detail. And now I've honed that small brush skill a little bit. And that's just like elevated my creations so much more when you actually see it, like it's that much more realistic because it has that much more detail so it's cool. It's actually interesting to actually think about the progress that I've made and how, you know, it's progressed over the last 17 years.
Yeah. And like any other artist, you can see it. We're all constantly looking at, you know, our current work versus, you know, somebody scrolls really far back on your Instagram and comments on something and you're like, oh, really? Yeah, that's what I was doing. Just look at the last couple of posts. Like that's where we're at now. But it is, you know, it's good for us to see that development and realize that there's still room for whatever's coming next. Right.
Yeah.
When did you first like accept and claim that title of artist?
probably fairly recently. So I think over the last probably six-ish years, I've probably considered myself more of an artist. I've created more of a business around it, selling t-shirts with my art on it, and just leaning more into it, creating more original artwork, trying to sell and market original artwork more. So yeah, probably in the last 5 or 6 years, I've maybe felt like an artist.
what do you think like pushed the edge a little bit? Like, was it more other people associating you with that title, or was it just like you said, developing the business side of it a little bit more?
Probably both. Yeah. I think that, having the confidence in myself and like wanting to paint more, actually painting more, just putting more time into the craft makes you, you know, like I felt like an imposter before, and, you know, sometimes I still do. I'm sure you feel like that as well. Yep. But yeah, I think that confidence, as well as the interest in it and people saying, oh, you're such a great artist. Oh, I love your art. Oh, you do. That's amazing. So I think probably a combination of those coming together, being like, all right, I guess, yeah, maybe I am an artist.
Yeah. It is one of my favorite things to try and like get people to like, you're an artist. Like, whether you're, doesn't matter if you're doing it as a business, but if you're making something, mm-hmm. and people be like, no, I just craft. I'm like, no, you're an artist. Right. If you're making something,
like
you're
Leslie.
Making art. Yes. Leslie's an artist.
She hates to, she will not claim that. No, I'm not an artist. No, I'm terrible at this. I can't paint. I can't.
Yeah.
But like, she does so many more different art forms than I do.
And skill level or technique, I don't think has anything to do with it. You know, if you're making something, whether it's a regular practice or not, because some people might not have the time that they can commit to it, or, you know, it has nothing to do with fine art materials for that matter either. Just if you're making something, whether it's, you know, physical or digital or whatever, artist.
Yeah. And I think it does probably come back to the imposter thing of like, I will happily tell anybody else that, no, you're a freaking artist. Are you kidding me? That's amazing. But then when it comes to me, who's been painting off and on for 17 years, I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I'm really an artist.
Yeah. Even sometimes I would just be like, I'm just a painter. You're like, you know, I'm just a painter.
Right.
I'm not an artist. I just like to paint.
That's an art form.
It's an art form. It is. Us artists, we're too self-critical sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you described your artistic style for us, but I also want to talk about the piece that you brought in today, mm-hmm. which is a different medium for you. It's not maybe your traditional medium or one that you've done more that people are more, you know, would recognize you for,
right.
But it's the digital work that you started doing. You have a series called The Weirdos, and that is what is behind you today.
Yes.
So the folks who are viewing this on YouTube can see it. But tell us a little bit about that series and how that got started.
So I, being a quadriplegic, do people like talk to the camera or just talk to you?
You can do both.
So being a quadriplegic, having a disability, I deal with a plethora of secondary complications. Like, a lot of people just think, oh, you're paralyzed or you're quadriplegic, you know, you can't walk, you know, but it's like, I have issues with bladder and bowel control. I get pressure sores, on my butt. So I need to, like, I've been laid up in bed for 6 months at a time. And so that's how this, weirdo series came about. Was I was stuck in bed for, I think, probably 2.5 or 3 months, staying off of a pressure sore on my butt. And so I, you know, literally stuck in bed. Like, I would get up to go to doctor's appointments if I had them, mm-hmm. but it was literally like trying to only be up for that hour of a doctor's appointment, get home, get off of the butt. Cause the best way to heal a pressure sore is to have zero pressure on it.
Yeah.
So literally just being laid up in bed, can only watch TV, play on my phone, text, call people. And then, I got an iPad. And I was like, oh, you know, I've heard of Procreate. People create digital artwork on their iPads. So got an Apple Pencil and an iPad and started just messing around on Procreate. And I literally just started, I think I just drew a shape on Procreate. And then I was like, well, let me see what I can turn that shape into. And it just turned into this like kind of weird shaped face with a crown and this crazy like green spiky hair-ish. And that was the first weirdo that I created. And then I started thinking about it more and creating it more from like the depths of my mind and my imagination and kind of the weirdos slash creatures themselves don't really come from a place of, well, some of them do, a place of like different mental health areas that mm-hmm. I've struggled in, but the little sayings that I write on them kind of ties it together with mental health struggles that I've dealt with. So yeah, it's like, it's definitely the most authentic and like real and emotional artwork that I've ever done. And I believe I have maybe 16 different weirdos that I've done.
In that series. Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, they're just these kind of oddball creatures, weird creations from the depths of my mind.
And they all have kind of a little, a few words or a phrase on them. Like this one says, I may look odd, but I'm not less than.
Yeah.
And it's like this sort of, you know, animal critter that's got antlers and sort of like a spine tail.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. So yeah, that was kind of the main inspiration for this piece, was just tying in somehow my spine. Obviously, I had a spinal cord injury. I shattered my C4 vertebrae. So his tail is just made up of, you know, the entire spinal column of vertebrae. And yeah, the saying is just, again, all the sayings are the main parts that tie into my like mental health of, you know, having a disability, being in a wheelchair, you go out in public and like people don't see that all the time. People are staring. People are like pointing. Little kids are, you know, pulling on their parents like, what's that? Why does he need that, mom? Which is great, asking questions. But, you know, it's like early on in the injury, like that's hard to like face that. Just being so different and like kind of the outcast and nobody knows, or people are afraid to talk to you or ask questions. So, yeah, this piece kind of touches on that of like, I'm not less than, cause I'm, you know, I'll just live a different life and I look a little different, but I'm still just a normal, you know, person. Yeah.
I think your TikTok, now that you're getting back into it a lot more, is you're doing a great job of, you know, kind of just having casual conversations about what your day-to-day life is like, whether it's necessarily into the art side of it or just day-to-day living. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of awareness breaks down stigmas, right? Of, you know, what it takes to live like this. And, you know, people are obviously very curious, and it seems like most people are respectful when they're asking you questions. I'm sure you get some that are just, you know, internet people doing their thing.
Yeah, I get a couple.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, 9 out of 10 are probably 9.5 out of 10 people are like, great. They're inquisitive. They're asking questions. They're being kind. They're, you know, honestly just there to learn or happy to learn.
Yeah.
I'll literally just, I have a phone set up where my phone just kind of looks right at me. So I'll literally just be like in my driveway or by the pool, and I'll just start recording and just roll around talking, sharing a story of mine or some like disability awareness. And honestly, the amount of comments that I get, saying things like, oh, that's amazing. I had no idea that that was, you know, that technology was around, or that, you know, this is how people with disabilities lived or made it work. And that's, you know, a huge catalyst of why I'm doing that is to raise the awareness and try to educate people who don't know, because you really don't know anything about the life of disability unless you yourself get thrust into it like I did, or you know somebody you're close enough to, you know, be able to learn via their experiences in life. So the fact that I can do that, and literally people in Scotland and Japan and Singapore are like seeing my videos and appreciating it and learning something, is like pretty incredible.
It really is. Yeah. Do you think, like, would you describe yourself as a introvert, extrovert, or somewhere in between?
I think if you had asked me that like 5 or 10 years ago, I'd say more of an extrovert or somewhere in between. I think I'm more of an introvert now for sure. Yeah. Like being in a room of 5 or more people for an hour plus. So like after that, I'm like, I got to decompress. That was wild.
Yeah, yeah. That was wild. I feel that in my spirit. Yeah. All right. Well, I definitely, you know, we talked a little bit about what inspires the weirdos, but in general, what would you say inspires your art practice? And we both know the truth, but don't say me.
When people on TikTok Live and everybody ask who my favorite artist is, I do say you.
Shucks.
But it's interesting kind of segue, I guess. I'll bring this up. I recently learned via talking to my therapist that I have an interesting relationship with art because having this severe physical disability, I can't move my arms. There's so many things I'm limited to. I can't, you know, do a plethora of things that I would love to do. Mouth painting is one of the few things I'm actually able to do on my own as a hobby. That's like, you know, something fun. And I, this conversation with my therapist, it came to light that I had resentment towards art because it's one of the only things I can do. I'm semi-forced into, you know, like if I don't do art, then I really can't do much. So I have this weird feeling with it. I think that's why I have a lot of pushback and why I don't, like, I want to do art. And then when it comes to it, I'm like, I'll do it tomorrow, you know, because it's like this one thing that I can do. So I have to do it. And the other side of that coin is like, it's a beautiful thing because it's the one thing that, you know, that I can do is like, damn, that's amazing. But as far as inspiration goes, I think just like I said, from my upbringing, just the nostalgia of the life of how I grew up, like it was such an incredible way to learn how to live. It was, everything was just carefree and we were in the Bahamas and it was no shoes, no shirt, you know, like we're on island time. Like there's nowhere you have to be. And so just probably the nostalgia of that is where I get the majority of my inspiration and want to create things that remind me of that upbringing, I think.
Yeah. It's a good answer.
Thanks.
It's an interesting relationship too, to have, you know, something where you're like, I obviously it's very different for me, but there's something that rings familiar in that for me, which is that the majority of the artwork I create is created within my professional business. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of push pull where I'm just like, yes, I want to paint all the time. And when I'm in it, I'm like, this is the best thing ever. Why am I not always doing this? Mm-hmm. But when I'm a step removed, there's a like, oh, I have to do this commission, or I have to prep these pieces because I have a festival coming up. So there's that, you know, that like want to, have to, those things are fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And artists, you know, I don't know, maybe this is just me, don't want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
So
I think, like you said, the commission part, I think that throws another wrench in there too, because it's a great way to make money as well. But then once you start doing that, you realize, wow, I paint because it's what I want to do. And like, I have this vision of this creativity that's growing inside me that I want to put on canvas. And then when somebody's like, do this for me, like you said, somebody telling you what to do.
Yeah.
It's just like, ah, damn.
This Even is if not- it's along the lines of something you would already do naturally. Mm-hmm. And there's like, to me, I'm almost fighting it a little bit until the end, until I get to the place where I'm like, okay, now I get to go show this person their painting. And that makes it all like, oh, this is why this is so great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause then at the end of it, you have somebody who's like, wow, this was custom made for me. I love it. Like it's going to hang in my home forever and I'm going to look at it every day. And that what could be more special than that? Your art hanging in somebody's house or, you know, being really prevalent in somebody's life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely the beautiful aspect.
All these tricky little mind things that we get caught up in as artists.
And, that little bit of pressure, that extra pressure from it will do it.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about your actual like creative process. Like you said, this is something that you can do on your own, but what is you getting in front of the easel look like? What's your setup look like?
So, I mean, I try to mentally prepare leading up to it. Like I said, when it comes to like, all right, got to paint, I oftentimes want to push it off and say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Or, you know, I don't have much going on this week. I'll do it another day this week or whatever. So mentally preparing to be like, all right, yeah, I'm ready to actually do this. And sometimes that looks like breath work, sitting by the pool for 10, 20, 30 minutes and kind of getting my mind right, breathing the fresh air, and then getting in front of the easel. If the easel's not set up, it's kind of a brief process, but Leslie needs to help. My girlfriend will, you know, get the easel set up. We'll pick out kind of the range of colors, get those ready to go, pick out my two or three different brushes that I'll be using, make sure the water's clean and fresh, turn on the right kind of music, crank that up a little bit, and then yeah, just get there. I'll sit in front of the canvas probably for 2 to 5 or so minutes and just like have the brush in my mouth, just staring at the canvas and just trying to conceptualize how I'm going to successfully bring this piece to life. I feel like that first stroke is definitely the hardest because it sets you on your way. And if you start on the wrong foot, then maybe it's going to be a crappy piece. So, I try to mentally prepare as much as I can for that first stroke and then just fully send it and be there for the next 2 to 6 hours.
Is that kind painting. Of the average amount of time that you're putting into a piece, or is that like phase one?
Depends on the size, but usually, I mean, a piece depends on the size and, you know, complexity of each piece, but it could take me anywhere from probably 3 to like 15 hours spread over 2 to 4 or 5 days,
yeah,
different sessions.
So we talked about the fact that you have, you know, your originals, but then you also have those transformed onto merchandise. So things like apparel, actually I'm wearing one of the shirts today.
Yes, ma'am, you are.
Big old jellyfish on my back. Apparel, stickers, tote bags, you know, kind of some fun products. I mean, you have a awesome surfboard at the Palooza every year.
Yeah.
Do you think you have a favorite kind of thing that you've, or like whether it's a favorite piece that you've put onto something, or one that you're like, yeah, that worked out exactly the way I wanted it to?
The jellyfish that's really? On your shirt. Yeah. Cool. So it was, Leslie and I were looking through inspo of, you know, what I could paint. And she found this, like the jellyfish that's on that shirt. And she found this image. She's like, you should do this. But like the head of the, I don't know what, the head, the body of the jellyfish is like translucent. So you can see through it and see whatever colors behind it. And I'm like, I've never done anything like that. And I literally said, like, I can't do that. And she's like, just try it. And so I ended up trying it and I just crushed it and nailed it. And I didn't think I was going to be able to do so. And that was a huge confidence boost as well for my art.
Yeah.
But also, it just turned into my favorite piece that I've ever done. I think I captured the little details. It looks extremely realistic and came out just beautifully. So we actually printed that on a surfboard. I think that was this past year's Cruisapalooza board. So that was, awesome to see it come to life and in a larger size be on a surfboard. But even just on the shirts, like, I just think it looks great.
Yeah.
So I think that's my favorite piece.
I
mean,
I do too. That's why I picked up this one. So, okay, let's talk. You mentioned the Palooza. So let's talk about that. The Cruisapalooza started in 2009?
Yes. I believe February 2009 was the first annual.
So does that mean
we're going
16 years? Is that mathing?
Yes, 16 years. We took a year off for COVID. I think just 1 year off. Yeah. So yeah, we're coming up on 16 years.
So what is the Palooza? Tell me about it.
So my injury was December 2008. I was still in the rehab facility, Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. I was there for 2.5 months. So I was still there for the first annual Cruisapalooza, but my cousin Christy started the first annual Cruisapalooza in her front yard, kind of like a cul-de-sac fundraiser. I think they had a local band or two come. Yeah. People donated everything. They had a silent auction, kegs, the music, like everything was donated. And in one night, I think they raised like somewhere around $40,000. And so it's since grown. We were in her front yard for 3 or 4 years. And then we went to the Delray Playhouse on Lake Ida in Delray Beach. And we were there for 7 or 8 years, maybe even 9. And then we outgrew that. We were supposed to only have 600 people. We had 800 people show up. So then we went to, Old School Square, which is downtown Delray Beach, like literally the largest outdoor venue.
Very
amphitheater.
Cool spot.
Yeah. Literally like right on Atlantic Ave. And we've now been there for 3 or 4 years now. And I think our biggest year, we had like almost 1,500 people come out. And yeah, so it's just this big kind of festival-ish. Yeah.
It still feels
now.
Like a big block party.
Right,
like it's a ton of family and friends. I mean, obviously it goes beyond that now. Like there's a lot of people, but you guys like pull in awesome food trucks.
Yep.
There's a whole bar. You have great music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Art vendors. Cornhole tournament.
You have your artwork up. Yeah, it's a really, really cool vibe. And it's all cool, like this great venue outside. It's just a beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. The amount of support from friends, family, community that know me and that do not know me, who just continually year after year come out and just support and enjoy the event. And yeah, like you said, it's just kind of like it's almost like a reunion now every year. There's so many people who you haven't seen since the last Palooza, and it's just like everybody gets together and has a good time for a good cause. So it's pretty incredible just to try to understand what it's grown into, and that, you know, it just kind of started from me having this injury and all these people just trying to support. It's pretty incredible.
And so this is still a part of your support system, the Palooza, but it's also, is it 50%? Is that right?
Yeah.
That goes to the Cruzy Baby Initiative.
Yes.
That you and some of your family and friends that have started and built this initiative. So what is the Cruzy Baby Initiative?
It's come to fruition from the years of support that I've had, and it's allowed me to get to a place where I'm now able to financially start giving back to other people in my situation who have a spinal cord injury, who lack the quality of life that I do, that, you know, the care, the support. Like, I am extremely privileged and lucky to have the support and care and friends, family, finances, literally everything around me. Like, that's why I am where I am. I'm able to do the things that I do. And so I've gotten to a point where now we've started this nonprofit organization called the Cruzy Baby Initiative, and we're still super fresh. We're still kind of, you know, building the foundation. I believe it's been 2.5 years since we started it, but really the last year we've started gearing more towards actually trying to fund it and actually trying to find people to help. Because there's so many people in my situation who do not have half of the help, a quarter of the help that I do. And in this situation, like, you're screwed. There's so many people who live in their beds or nursing homes because they just don't have the means, the care, the support, the finances to have a accessible vehicle, to be able to even go to their doctor's appointments or whatever it is. So being in the position that I am now able to give back, is pretty awesome.
And I mean, being up against, you know, as a, like, able-bodied, relatively healthy person being up against the medical, you know, industry in our state and country is tough as it is.
Right.
So yeah, if you're somebody with, like you said, not a lot of family support going through this, not a lot of community support, can't imagine how, you know.
Yeah, it's tough. You need like, my mom luckily was a beast of an advocate when I had my injury, and she was calling people and making connections. Oh, learning from this person that you need to call this person to get this done. So yeah, without the ability to be your own advocate or even knowing where to start to try to get things done and not having the finances to do so, it's hard for sure.
So is that kind of a part of the initiative too? Maybe not just the finances, but also the actual resources of, like, here are, you know, doctors that we've worked with for years or different medical facilities that have helped us or things like that. Like, do you kind of provide a list of resources?
Trying to grow into that and have a couple different sectors for sure of, like, financial support. My mom's kind of going to take on being the advocacy support. And, you know, here's contacts. This is who you need to call. This is how we did it. You know, this is how you get on Medicare or Medicaid, whatever it is.
So
trying to slowly build out different sectors so we can help in as many areas as possible.
That's awesome. And you've got an event coming up. Unfortunately, it will have passed by the time this episode comes out, but you're branching out beyond the Palooza. So the Palooza happens annually. Is it going to be in April this?
It's going to be March again. So it's usually been in April, but this past year was in the end of March, and 2026 will also be, I believe it's Saturday, March 28th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And it'll be in Old School Square again?
Yep.
Very cool. Yeah, yes. It's a great place. So if people want to find out more about the Palooza or get involved, like you said, there's food truck vendors, there's artists there. I mean, obviously there's still the silent auction, right? So people can donate items to the silent auction. You had a lot of, like, awesome things last year or this year, I guess. So yeah, people can get involved on the website.
Yes, we love anybody who's interested in being a sponsor or, yeah, volunteering at the event or, yes, donating to the silent auction. You can learn more and get involved at the website right here. Bing. Can we do that?
We'll try.
cruzyinitiative.org, also cbinitiative.org. I believe those will take you to the same place. But yeah, there's information, there's forms to fill out if you're interested in being a sponsor or donating items, and also more information about the fundraising events that we are hosting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So we got more to talk about, but we're going to take a quick little break and we're going to hear a word from our sponsors, the wonderful Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. So stay tuned and listen to a message from them and we'll be right back.
You're going
to
love it.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces, spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
All right. So speaking of Palm Beach County, unique art sector here, right? Where do you feel like you feel most at home within that?
I mean, I've really only been super active in Delray. Like I went to Art Basel a couple times, was lucky enough to do that. And that's just a crazy experience. I definitely don't feel like I fit in down there. That's just a different world, especially during that art week is crazy.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that experience more too.
All right. So yeah, I don't know. I think just Delray and like the little bit of time I spent with you at the Peach, it's just kind of like slower. It's just not a, you know, a craziness around it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think just locally around.
Yeah. We had our studio pop up, at the Arts Warehouse in Delray, which is a really cool space. It's a multi-artist working studio. So I think it's 15 artist studio bays, if I remember correctly, both upstairs and downstairs. Yeah. And then they have like a wonderful gallery set up. They have the whole like front downstairs of the building is a gallery. And then they have a big back room that functions as a gallery and another event space too. And I love the shows they put on there. Like they have some really great caliber artists, not just from their studios, but also, you know, pull them in and curate them in for their shows too. So it was really cool to be a part of that space.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I feel like I had like a lot of good energy there. You know, there was just cool people around and yeah, nice to see a lot of activity. Create. Yeah, it definitely gets you in the zone a little bit easier. Yeah. And then the Peach, you know, I had my studio there for a little while in West Palm Beach. That's another artist collective, of course, but it's a little bit smaller. There's six studios there, but it's another great spot. You know, there's interesting things going on and it's just good to be around other creative people sometime.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Like we just mentioned that energy, like having the home studio is great, you know, financially, but it's totally up to you to get
going,
the train on the tracks. But when you're in this studio and there's an artist right next to you in this spot and an artist right next to you in this spot and just having all of the art up. And then when you first come into the Arts Warehouse, it's like a little museum. Mm-hmm. So you're just, the energy is great. So yeah, it's much easier to create in a space like
that. It's true. I still look back and I am impressed with myself about how much I got done there. Really? And then we also did our collab, like a good chunk of our collaboration series was done there. So we were on fire.
Working.
Yeah. We were working. all right. Well, you mentioned Art Basel. So I wanted to talk about that too. You've exhibited artwork during that with LVMH, huge brand. What did it feel like to have that kind of platform for your artwork?
I mean, it was super cool. I was honored to have that opportunity. I believe I was there for 3 years, the same event. They changed venues a couple times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got invited back a couple of years in a row. Like you said, a huge brand. Like I think they are top three or five brand, you know, $1 trillion brand or something.
Massive.
So yeah, it was a part of their like diversity and inclusion sector, I guess. So yeah, they had, diverse artists there. A couple of us had disabilities, you know, a couple different race artists and, LGBTQ artists. So it was just cool to be involved and side by side sharing art with these people.
Yeah.
And like I said, just the craziness of Art Basel is nuts. That week is
wild.
Insane. Yeah. So it's like to have the amount of people filtering through and seeing my art, like these weirdos, I think it was a great place to showcase the weirdos. It's kind of that different, diverse art. It's not, you know, not everybody loves the nautical stuff that we do. You kind of need to be in that, lane of thought, I guess. And being able to showcase my weirdos, it's just like everybody deals with mental health to some degree. So like there were so many people, connecting with my art. Yeah. So
now was that a moment where you're on site and you're talking with these people about your work?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which that's a whole nother, like that's a big, you know, big thing to do where you're answering a lot of questions about a series that maybe you haven't really shown that much before. And suddenly it's like from no eyes to thousands of eyes in a very short period of time. And I think you did a panel once too there, right?
Yeah. I think 2 out of the 3 years we did a panel.
Okay.
And so that, you know, that was in front of 100-ish people, people asking questions, and yeah, it was very cool. Like you said, I hadn't really shown this weirdo series to just about anybody. So that's really the only place that people have seen my weirdos was at Art Basel. And yeah, to see the response, like I said, just so many people actually connected with it. And it's not like, oh, that's a cool pelican. It was like, oh shit. Like I felt that art, like that is dope.
Yeah.
And just to get that response is very cool.
That is.
Especially from, like I said, nobody seeing it. You put it out there and it's like on literally the biggest stage.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very cool. Very awesome experience.
Is that a style of exhibiting that you feel drawn to do more of?
The Art Basel or the weirdo stuff?
Well, like that kind of setup, whether it's Art Basel or something else, but doing sort of exhibitions of your work where you know, are at some sort of event that's, you know, pulling bigger numbers of people and you're there and engaging with the viewer. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you enjoy or want to do more of?
I do enjoy that. You and I have talked about kind of the Ardi Gras situation. I would love to participate.
I'm trying to get him to apply. The deadline's coming up. You got to get in.
I will be applying. But yeah, in the past I've done smaller shows, like just around Delray and Boynton. I did a handful. And it doesn't always pay off. And the setup is big and I can't do it myself. So I'm like relying on my dad and friends and family to come like volunteer and help me like, you know, try to sell stuff and do the whole shebang. So I think if it's like an Ardi Gras sized thing, it makes more sense. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger thing. People are coming there to look at art and purchase art. So yeah, things like that. I do enjoy that of being there. Connecting with the consumer one-on-one, getting to look people in their eyes while you talk about the art, they can ask questions and learn the process, the story. So yeah, that's definitely something specific niche events and festivals. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Related to fine arts. That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. So what role I wanted to ask, do you think art plays in helping a community, helping the community of people who live there feel, I don't know, more integrated into the space, more, you know, more capable of utilizing the space they live in, whether that's like public spaces or, you know, businesses? Like, how does art make a community feel like a community?
I mean, that's a good question. It's a tough question. I would say, from my perspective, I think art, it's a way to express yourself, right? So I think when you're truly and authentically expressing yourself, you feel the most you. So if you sharing can rub off on somebody who's, you know, at a museum or at your art gallery or sees your art on a mural or something, if that can help them feel more like them, their full authentic self, I think that's what fosters the most connection. Hmm. And I think communities come from connection. So yeah, I think just the authenticity of creating allows other people to feel like they can do the same.
Yeah.
And that just fosters more authentic and true connection.
Yeah, that's a great answer. It gives people the sense that if that person can be authentic and put themselves out there, then maybe so can I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love it. I love that answer. Nailed it.
Nice.
All right. I ask this question to every guest that I have on here, which is, if you had to suggest one, could be an event, could be like a mural, a public piece of art, could be a destination, something related to arts and culture of this area that you think anybody living here or visiting here should experience, what would be that one thing?
Cruiserpalooza.
Oh, yeah.
Music and Arts Festival.
Use it. Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah. We've, the past couple of years, we have invited artists to come. We never really had like quote unquote vendors. But I kind of send out like exclusive invites to the artists who I would like to have, whether they are local and I just like the work they do, or they have a disability. So yeah, it's slowly turned and turning more into this actual music and arts festival where you can come and experience some local artists who usually do it differently.
Listen, it was fun this past year. I had a great time. I was there live painting. A couple of the artists I know were there. Jess Kirby, she was painting there. She's awesome. Hannah Love had her jewelry there, and she was like silversmithing on site.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to forget her name, but you had another friend there who was doing the ceramic art.
Yes. Bethany Cohen,
who was, had the, you know, the wheel there, and she was like spinning these little tiny, like cute ceramic pots. And I bought multiple of them because they were adorable. But yeah, it was a really nice vibe this year to have those kind of extra artists in there and seeing people engage and see how things were made. It was fun.
Yeah. And I want to keep
building on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, Cruiserpalooza. So Delray Beach, Old School Square, March.
March 28th, I believe it is. It's the last Saturday of March.
Okay.
2026.
Cool. All right. So we want to get into some like reflections as we kind of wind down here and get towards the end of this. I always like to ask, you know, if you could give some advice, if you could leave some wisdom, what's one piece of wisdom that you would maybe give about maybe resiliency and creativity?
I mean, I hate the cliche, like never give up, you know, like I've heard that so many times, but to a degree of just never giving up, whether it's being thrust into a crazy life situation, like a disability, or just being an artist and dealing with the struggles and ups and downs of that, and, you know, not being able to, or not wanting to, having the inspiration to create all the time. I think just the body in motion, in motion tends to stay in motion. If you can just do some sort of creating, whether it's every day or, you know, give yourself a timeline, create once a week and just continue doing it, build the habit, try to build the consistency and continue doing it. I think that's the best way to just keep doing it. And that's something that I heavily struggle with. But if you can build that practice, I think that that's a great way to continue creating and just build upon that habit over and over again.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you know that it's valuable for you.
Right.
Like, you, that doesn't mean that you have to create work that has a, you know, any kind of like monetary value attached to it, or even that's ever seen by anyone else.
Right.
But it's valuable to you as the creator to make something. You know, you just, you feel better about life.
Yeah.
When you're in some sort of creative process.
Like you said earlier, when you kind of dread it up until, and then once you're in it, you're like, oh, I want to do this all the time. And yeah, it's a good feeling. It's a good practice. I'd say that's a pretty good solid one.
Any other habits? I think you kind of mentioned this a little bit, that sort of lead you into your art practice, like breath work or anything like that.
Sometimes I'll hit the pen.
Yeah. I like it.
Sets the tone a little bit.
Sets the tone, sets the vibe. All right. Yeah, really, I've got only got one more question, and that's a pretty simple one. So is there anything before I get to that that you want to talk about that we didn't get into?
I'd like to ask you a question.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Being a professional artist, content creator, podcast host, animal parent, in a relationship, home renter owner, how do you find that you balance it all? What is your best practice of that? Because being an adult is hard, and trying to kind of going back to the question you just asked me about like resiliency and trying to stay creative and stay within your passion and enjoying life. Like, it's very hard.
Yeah.
So what's your 2 cents on that?
Yeah. Being your own boss is hard. Like, I'm either too hard on myself sometimes, or I'm not hard enough on myself. Yeah. So it's, you know, I would love to say that I have a system that creates this ideal balance and flow and everything's like, you know, just chill, but I'm juggling just like everybody else, yeah. You know, and sometimes I drop the ball. So it's not always like a seamless act from the outside. It may look like I know what I'm doing. And while technically I do, it still doesn't mean I do things perfectly. So, you know, there are seasons, and the best I can do is try to give myself grace and honestly learn to ask for grace from other people too. Mm-hmm. Because as a creative, there's sometimes where I'm just like, I have got to shut the world out and go get in my studio for 12 hours straight. Don't talk to me. Okay. And, you know, I can't do that every day. That's not realistic. I have, you know, people and animals and things and events and that are, you know, dependent on me being a part of it at some point. But, you know, I just try to find the time where I can. And thankfully, I also have people that I can rely on to like, okay, I'm just going to slip food under the door for you so you can keep doing that for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the next day I get to do my adult stuff, like actually do laundry and, you know, take care of the house and life and things like that. Or maybe I have an event that day. So it's juggling. There's not a good system, you know,
it's not always a balance.
No, it's not always a balance. It shifts all the time. And I think it's just trying to give yourself grace, ask other people for grace along the way, and find the support that works for you. You know, for me, that's friends and family who are really supportive. I have a lot of wonderful artist friends, you know, yourself included, that we have great conversations or chats or just like, hey, you know, checking in, seeing what you're doing this week, just kind of throwing some support your way. And also like legitimate mental health support. You know, I've done therapy and that has been really supportive for me as well. So, you know, actual professional help is important from time to time. Yeah. So I have definitely relied on that too. And it's helped me a lot. So yeah, it's juggling.
All right. Good to know.
It's a good question though.
Yeah. I just want to second that therapy has been a huge help for me as well. And I highly recommend it to anybody out there who does not yet have a therapist, whether you think you have things to talk about or not, or address or not, you do. And the therapist will help you figure that out and get to the bottom of it. And it's extremely helpful. So
yeah. Yeah. If you have, you know, the access or the ability, sometimes there's, you know, programs, funding that you might be able to utilize if you don't have the access or the ability to, you know, pay for those kind of things yourself. But it's so helpful. And I also encourage people in that same vein. You might not find the right person the first therapist you go to or the first doctor you see. You know, it's kind of like it can take some time to get into that. That's something that I learned along the way, where maybe the first time I started doing therapy, I was a little like, oh, I don't think this isn't working for me. Maybe therapy just isn't for me.
Right.
But it really took, you know, going to maybe 3 or 4 other people before I found, you know, like a professional relationship that felt like it got the situation or it was the right kind of therapy that helped my brain.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's alternatives that are just like, it's not necessarily you're going to find it right on the first try. Right.
You got to date around to find your right therapist. It's got to be a good fit because you're talking about intimate things.
That yes, you don't if you're doing it right, you're talking about everything. Right,
stuff that you don't necessarily want to be talking about. So yeah, you got to be comfortable with the person.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Cool. Well, last question is the easy one, like I said, which is just how can people connect with you further? If they want to know more about your story, if they want to, you know, see some more behind the scenes, check out your artwork, check out your apparel and your merchandise, where can they do that?
So my personal website where you can check out my art and apparel is just my name, cruzbogle.com, right here. Bing. And my nonprofit website is cruzyinitiative.org, right here. And my social medias like Instagram and TikTok are Cruzy Baby, CRUISEYBABBBY, right here. Bing. So feel free to check me out. Ask me questions, send me messages. I really appreciate it.
And just in case they didn't bing up on the screen magically, we will also have them in the comments and in the description below this video.
Really hope they can make that bing work out.
Fingers crossed. All right. Well, thank you everybody who tuned in, who listened or viewed this episode. We really appreciate you a lot. You can always leave us questions and comments. And yeah, you can check out some other great episodes on the Artie Gras podcast. I hope you do. Cruz, thanks again for spending some time with me today. We're actually going to go do a life drawing class together now too. So we're just keeping the art vibe rolling today.
Big day. Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm really happy to do this.
My pleasure. And thanks again. A big thank you to our Cultural Council for Palm Beach County, our wonderful sponsor. We'll see you next time on the Artie Gras podcast. Yeah.